Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi, I'm Shovik Das. I'm Leslie DeMonte.
And I'm Deepti Ahuja. You're listening to Mint Etc.
A podcast where we will talk about important developments in technology and how they will transform our lives, work and play as we know it. Welcome to Tech Cetera, your favorite technology podcast, where every week we come up with a pretty interesting and sometimes eccentric range of topics that Leslie and I happen to cover as part of our reportage. And this week in particular has been very interesting because, and Leslie will of course elaborate on this going forward, but an interesting piece of news headline was covered across multiple publications. And the particular headline in question spoke about the world's first suicide or self-harm committed by a robot. And that has, of course, raised a few eyebrows. Now, beyond the fact that this is a very catchy headline and it's probably drawn a lot of search and audience traffic, the real question here that was raised by Leslie as well in his piece that he wrote following the emergence of this particular report is whether the idea of robots committing suicide can even happen or not. So Leslie, I'd probably leave it to you to sort of touch upon this and talk about it in terms of what you think about this particular topic and the rationale behind robots, intelligence and sentience, and whether something like self-harm can even be committed by a machine.
I see. I think we watch too many sci-fi movies.
That is very true.
You watch a sci-fi movie like iRobot or Rajnikant's Antiram, and you see, Rajnikant's robot falling in love with Aishwarya Rai and all that kind of stuff. Or you watch a movie like WALL-E or Her, for that matter of fact. You start, the tendency is sometimes to believe that robots, think and act like us. But you just look at your own, as I said, you're intelligent. You have a smart air conditioner, or for that matter of fact, if you have a Roomba vacuum cleaner, or for that matter of fact, if you have...
Right.
Even your smartphone is AI enabled. So it's important, just to look at this, that these are also machines, smart sensors, smart this, etc., that do a lot of other stuff. They work 24/7. So none of us get distressed over the fact that, these guys are working 24/7, they're getting overworked. Your laptop, for that matter of fact, if it's an AI-enabled laptop or the Gen AI, we don't tend to think of these machines as robots. But remember that they're smart machines at the end of the day. Now, my whole
thing,
here you do not get upset, but you get very upset when, say, a so-called robot that looks like us, which has got, what is known as anthropomorphism. So anthropomorphism is a tendency of human beings to attribute human-like values to machines. In this particular case, robots, and more so, robots look like us. So, even they have a kind of a face. If it just try to take a step back and think about all the extraterrestrial or the ET movies you have seen, in some sort of way, they'll always have had.
Yeah, of course.
So you'll not see a strange kind of creature. They'll either resemble an animal or they resemble a human, but everything that we can relate to. But if something exists in outer space or on some other exoplanet, for that matter of fact, it does not necessarily have to be a carbon-based life, or it doesn't necessarily have to be something like a human being or an animal. So we generally,
And it's probably the unlikeliest that an alien would look like us.
So that is the whole question. You know? That's the question that everybody is asking, that even if we go to a planet like Mars, or we go to one of these moon of Saturn, which is Titan, which is sort of right. Kind of the habitable zones.
Frozen water reserves.
The Goldilocks zones, as it is known. Yes. So these are like Earth-like kind of atmospheres, though actually Titan is not even an Earth-like atmosphere. But I'm just saying that these are the planets that offer you a chance that there could be life, because there is liquid water, there is a semblance of an atmosphere, etc. But there too, you're not sure what kind of life you will find. If you're trying to look from the lens of human yoga, the same is with this machine. Now, what happened in South Korea, you had a machine that was called a robo supervisor. And remember that South Korea has the highest density of robots in the world. And they're very emotionally attached to their robots. So that is something that you need to keep at the back of your mind. So the robot fell down, collapsed. And now everybody said, okay, fine. The story got twisted along the way, saying that it committed suicide. But now, if you look at the word suicide, what does it imply? It implies that, so when a human being commits suicide, okay, what does it imply? That you're feeling something. You're feeling very depressed to a point where you do not want to live any longer. And then you take a decision, because you're aware, you're self-aware. You take a decision that you want to end your life. Now, just look at that power. You're attributing the same kind of power to a machine. Then, which also again implies that either that machine has that kind of a technology, whether it be artificial intelligence or some kind of a biomechanical upgrade or bio, molecular computer upgrade or whatever you want to call it, that it is allowing the robot and giving the poor robot that kind of a power where it has, the robot has a brain, can think about committing suicide and eventually commits suicide because it feels overworked. Remember, we are eons away from even, what is known as artificial general intelligence, or the whole tendency of machines becoming smarter than human beings, or thinking and reasoning like how we human beings do. So I think that is important, to make that distinction and understand that robot, however intelligent, are not, smart enough or self-aware to commit suicide as such.
No, it's interesting what you said, Leslie, because I've in fact been thinking on the same lines, and multiple questions and opinions and observations here. But one of the first things that came to my mind is that, so there has always been a factor of planned obsolescence in machines. And, especially in satellites, for instance, we've seen that oftentimes these satellites are programmed to sort of not work beyond a certain number of years based on certain conditions around it. And could you correlate that to the factor of robots sort of ending their own lives in terms of, at the end of the day, what is it that you check your surroundings, you gauge that you can no longer operate at your best?
No, you just look at this robot in question. So this was like created, developed by Bear Robotics. The firm was Bear Robotics. And it was a robot supervisor in one of the city councils in South Korea. And it was working only from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. So it had a work limit.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the robot has a better work-life balance.
Yeah, it had a work-life balance. It was 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. So I do not. But I think the question of it being overworked was because it had to, sort of open the lifts itself. It was, sort of thought that it was protesting because it had to start the lift itself, get into the lift, go to the second floor, and then do some work, come back. Yes, the less said, the better about these things. But you have to also, having said that, there is a different point of view that you have to respect the South Korean culture here that, has that emotional connect with robots. Now, all these robots are not necessarily, human-like or humanoid kind of robots, or androids for that matter. But there is that emotional connect because it's a different kind of society. So one has to respect the culture of that particular society. But when we come from a different kind of culture and we approach from a different lens, then our interpretation of these kind of phenomena will always be different. But having said that, as I said, from a true kind of a sentient kind of robot? No, we do not have that kind of thing because AI isn't that advanced. And when will AI be sentient? When will AI come to a level where it becomes smarter than a human being? That is anybody's guess. I mean, you can throw any,
right.
But at this point in time, it is more a distraction than a constructive
kind constructive of conversation. Absolutely. And I also personally feel that, you know, when we kind of start trying to correlate the factor of robots having feelings and things like whether a robot was overworked, I think the very fundamental idea of creating robots was to have machines do things that humans possibly couldn't. And fundamentally, robots were designed to increase efficiency. There's a reason why, you know, factories are have replaced humans with machines. It's just because they're efficient and they're supposed to sort of be able to work around the clock to an extent.
Yeah, but that is exactly my point, no, Shavik. If you start looking at them as companions, and then that whole thing is, are you treating them as slaves by making them overwork? So, you know, it's hard to have a sensible discussion on this topic without getting, you know, emotionally worked up. So, because there's always extreme points of view. So, I think best left to understand that if somebody wants to treat a robot as a companion, feel free. But for us, if I'm using a Roomba, I wouldn't want to time my vacuum cleaner such that, okay, I would give. Now you'll say, okay, fine, give the machines a break. Yes, you have to give your machine a break. Even when I take my bike out, I have to give it a break for the engine to cool down.
Yeah, absolutely.
So those things, I think, will happen by default. But as I said, let's not confuse it with a sentient machine.
And yes, absolutely.
That word suicide was terribly confusing and terribly misleading. Should not have happened.
Absolutely.
That's
misleading.
Personally.
And I think this also warrants a conversation perhaps with a mental health expert and psychiatrist or psychologist on the human-machine intersection point. Wow, I forgot the word intersection.
Yeah, but then you one form, you already have it in the form of digital detox. So you'll have a micro detox probably.
That's making things pretty complicated of late.
But see, remember, at home you use a smart washing machine. Come on, give me a break on that. You use a smart dryer. You use a smart air purifier. You don't have any problems with that. So we have learned to coexist. And
right.
You have got smart cars. Yeah, you have got cars that talk back to you at today. Level 3 automation levels that we have within cars. You have
it
a Tesla. You have been in a Tesla driverless car, level 5 automation. Imagine.
Right.
Just think about it. Now, if you say that the car is getting overworked, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think that'll really.
But the car will take a break. Please understand that the car will take a break to charge. It will get its break. It will take a car. It has to refuel. It has to recharge. Not in Tesla's case, recharge itself. So recharge its batteries, as they say, literally.
Very interesting juncture that we are at the very least. But that's one of the most interesting topics of the day. And of course, to our listeners, if you're listening, do join us in conversation about what you think about robots having feelings and how that pans out, how that could pan out in future. Meanwhile, focusing on the present, if you have read Mint's print edition on today, which is the 9th of July, which is the day that we're recording this episode, you might have read our take on why foldable smartphones have kind of failed to gain popularity even after 5, 7, almost a decade of innovation, so to speak. And the premise being that, you know, even now, while there are about 9, 10 odd different variants of foldable smartphones in the Indian market, the overall market remains still pretty small. I think about 0.4% of all phones sold in India every year are foldable devices. And of course, there is one side of the argument that foldable phones are expensive. I think the least expensive one is around 65,000 and the most expensive one is nearly 2 lakh. But they're honestly not unheard of prices. I mean, you know, in the modern day, you have people spending 80,000 rupees on an iPhone, and even on Android phones, the price, general pricing of flagship phones have gone up. But foldable phones have kind of failed to gain mainstream popularity for a wide range of reasons. Personally, what I feel the biggest thing is that there is a fundamental lack of innovation. But with that, Leslie, I'd want to come to you because you've seen the analog generation.
Oh, I love the landline phones. I love the Nokia E90. So I was a very heavy user of the Nokia E90.
The E90
was a foldable phone. It was a foldable phone, please, for heaven's sake. Right. But except that it had hinges. So you used to close it. And the point with the foldable phone today is that you get the entire screen. Over there, you could use the other part of it, the second, the lower part of the phone as a keyboard and use the screen. And then, of course, the screen was accessible on the outer side of the phone, but the advantage
was a really tiny screen back then on the outside.
I mean, obviously that screen was not remember that there were no smartphones and we used to not check our email and apps and as much as we do. So we used to play games or we used to do very limited activities. It is only after the smartphone started coming out in 2007 that we really started exploiting many other things over there. So if you remember the Nokia N93 flip phone, for that matter of fact. So you had
which turned into a camcorder, in fact.
Absolutely.
Which was really cool.
No, we had those kind of contraptions at that point in time with of course, the app ecosystem wasn't there at that point in time. So we didn't understand many of the things. The feel and touch was very different from what we have today on our foldable phones.
Right.
I really don't have a problem with any foldable phone, for that matter of fact. I enjoy using a foldable phone. Only thing, my personal take on this, as I said, it does not, it's more anecdotal than anything to do with the technology. I think it's the reason why foldables are not picking up at the pace that the handset makers think they should be picking up is probably because a lot of people who can afford a foldable phone already have tablets.
Yes, absolutely.
So now if I have a tablet PC, if I'm already using, like I use the Lenovo for that matter, right? I have the Lenovo tablets and I have it with a 5G SIM card. So I really don't feel the need for the foldable phone because I'm carrying then two huge pieces of hardware. So that's for me is the main thing. And I can do so many more things on the thing. Now you'll say, okay, fine, but you can condense both into one. No, but I can do the same with the iOS because I'm using the tablet PC for many other things. And then, of course, my laptops themselves have gone, they are thinner, they are less bulkier than what they were.
Absolutely.
So that's perhaps one of the reasons why the foldable phones are not. Because I don't think the price point for me, I would disagree that the price point is, because people now, phones also cost what, 70 to anywhere between 70 and 1 lakh. So, and you're spending as much on a good tablet, then you have tablet PCs also have smartwatches. So just think about it. So people are already spending on that. A Bose earphone, or they would have some other one, whether it's an Apple, whatever it be.
Absolutely. And I think, in fact, that's one side of the argument that we have presented, that the fundamental problem is innovation. And in fact, that, foldable phones haven't really created any particularly new use cases, which you would be like,
I think the form factor came a bit too late. It should have come much earlier. It would have given a tough fight to the tablet.
Tablets themselves stand at a precarious juncture. In fact, I remember it's been multiple
laptops,
years.
As I said, your laptops have become less bulkier. They have become, and you can do so much more on a laptop than you can do on a tablet.
And that barrier, I think tablets have still not managed to breach in the sense that they've not managed to kill tablets.
But I don't think rollable phones perhaps will have the same issue, I think so. I can't imagine you taking a phone and then rolling it out and spreading it.
I think that's the biggest problem, that I don't know why I would want to roll my phone.
But I guess each
perhaps time,
if you remember, we had this conversation earlier also on earlier podcast. I said it's always a question of you never know who will use it in what manner. So we think,
Absolutely.
You know, because a person may take a rollable phone, and if the screen is like, it depends on the size of the screen. It's 8 or right. Hold it against a wall and, you know, do things that we probably cannot imagine at this point in time. Or it could just fall through the case and, you know, disappear as something that is not being or that does not have much utility value. So somebody else may see utility in a rollable phone that we may not see at this point in time. So I would not be in too much of a hurry to, you know, dismiss all these things. But yes, can we do without them at this point in time? Unless they give us a real reason to buy, it will always be a question of, you know, why.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the biggest points in this conversation. But one thing that going beyond foldable phones, the one thing that seems more certain to be coming our way is satellite connectivity on Apple's new iPhones. In fact, this was a Mint exclusive report this week.
I know that.
Yes, I did. And the Apple's iPhone 14 and 15 series, and of course the upcoming 16 series as well, are set to get.
I think you needed to make it clear to our listeners that, you know, Apple will have to get permission from the government because satellite phones were not allowed.
Yes.
Also, I think you mentioned clearly, which was a good point in that article, that it is a, you know, it is a half duplet communication, a one-way communication rather than a two-way communication.
Yes.
And it just for SMS.
Absolutely. And in fact,
SOS.
And in fact it's still in the works. The license has still not been granted. But once it does, Apple's iPhones will be, even in India, will be able to send emergency messages, just emergency messages, one-way messaging to an emergency point of contact if you are stranded somewhere remote and you just cannot reach any cellular network. And in fact, there are reports that iOS 18 on the upcoming iPhone is going to enable two-way satellite-based messaging across a select few geographies where Apple would hold a license, satellite operator's license, of course, for a fee, for a premium, which is going to be charged by Apple, apparently. And all of this is speculation, but next generation of devices might enable this. But interesting development, Leslie, because I think this is where, this is sort of like the early step for when we see that Apple's satellite communications, satellite communications come into the mainstream fold.
No, I think it's a very good feature. I mean, undoubtedly a very good feature. But of course, as with the good features, they can always be misused. But that's the, as they always say, technology is always a double-edged sword, just like any other thing. You could use a, for that matter of fact, you can use a house knife to kill and to cut. So I don't think that's really going to cut much ice. I think it's a much needed feature because if you're, like say for instance, somebody is going hiking on a forest trail or something, you know, one deep into the forest or something, gets caught, might, you know, you would require satellite connectivity to send a
message. Right.
Because your phone networks won't work anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, James Franco's, the famous movie, 127 Hours, comes to mind, where the hiker fell through a crevice while hiking on Grand Canyon and got stuck.
And
he had to cut his own limb. But in this particular case, possibly satellite connectivity could be a potential lifesaver. But one opinion that I'd probably like to have is that Apple has said so far that the feature will remain free on all eligible devices until September 2025. There is speculation in the industry that Apple is considering making the service free, at least for emergency services. But there is also the other side of the conversation that it will eventually become a premium service that you have to subscribe to, or you can subscribe just for a month and so on and so forth. Your opinions on this, Leslie? Should such
a
feature come for premium?
I don't think emergency services globally have never been charged. So I don't think Apple will do that. I don't think
that. Right.
Because even you know that even if your phone is dead, it can, you can still send SOS messages if you have, you know, if you're using the services kind of stuff. So
right.
So I think that's extremely important that they keep those emergency services alive. And with satellite, I think, because it's a kind of a service, a value-added service that you're doing. And it earns you a lot not only brownie points, it will earn you a lot of goodwill. And you never know, many people may just switch over to buying an iPhone because it has that service. And other, if Android incorporate that kind of service in Android phones, that could be a negative for Android.
Right. But, and before we wrap up, just one more thing is that last year, Qualcomm wanted to enter this space too with Android device makers and introduced a Qualcomm Snapdragon satellite chip. But in 2023, end of 2023, in December 2023, that chip was discontinued. And Iridium, the satellite operator, said that they are no longer working with Qualcomm to develop satellite communication capabilities, at least as of now. Would you still expect this particular feature of satellite-based communications expand to other devices and perhaps become like a premium feature where even in extreme situations, you can pay a certain fee and communicate with the select contacts, even if you don't have...
I don't think handset makers really have an option. They will have to. Because if the feature becomes that popular that people are going to switch phones just because of this, because it's a very good feature, undoubtedly.
Right.
So look at the application. So one has to see how popular the application. Now, just imagine like when WhatsApp was introduced, if it had to be only introduced on Android phones and if iPhones didn't have it, you think iPhones would have succeeded in today's world? You had to get. So look at the amount of features iPhone itself had to incorporate because of pressure from public. They may tweak it. They may do whatever they want. That's a different issue.
Yeah, of course.
But ultimately, they have to introduce the feature because just the popularity itself is, it's like the people's verdict, I would put it that way.
Right, absolutely. And on that very interesting note, it's time to end for this week. As always, do write to us and let us know what you'd want us to talk about next week or in the coming weeks. Or even if you'd want to just have a chat about philosophical things like whether robots should have feelings. That's a very interesting question that probably still remains to be answered going forward. But for now, it's time to end. Thank you so much for tuning in. That's it for this week. See you next time.
See you. Bye.
So folks, that's it for this episode. You are listening to Mint Etc. You can reach out to us on LinkedIn if you have any questions. Our handles are in the description.
This episode was produced by me, Deepthi Ahuja. It was edited by Amrinder Singh. Catch you next week.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.